The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Do you know your name?
Gailara Vada.
And do you know where you are?
You're the mercenaries.
Yes.
When can I get back to my ship?
After the Major talks to you, probably.
Captain Vada, we have a problem. We need a place to stash some neutral civilians. Your ship is more than adequate for that task.
Have you ever been in charge of a refugee situation?
No. You have suggestions?
The captains of the other Civ ships are going to think they should be running this. You have to convince them otherwise.
We want to talk to you.
This is ridiculous!
Unbelievable!
You get us killed!
Come on.
You're exceeding your authority!
This is a cargo hold!
Enough! I'm lucky to be alive, and so are you. Don't push your luck!
You know, from inside those cargo holds, they don't have far to go to access the linkages with hardware.
If they wanted to mess us up, they could.
I was afraid of that.
Drive just came on, Captain. Full boost. I can't get it off.
And I can't get anywhere with the nav board.
It's time to let more experienced officers take over.
Don't do it, Kai!
Gary?
Don't let him get the ship!
Let him go.
Hand us your captain's wallet. Then we'll see.
Vata's War. Book 1, Trading in Danger. Part 2, in graphic audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Danny Gavigan, Joe Brack, Eric Messner, Tim Getman, Ren Casey, Jonathan Watkins, Drew Copus, Christopher Graybill, Nanette Savard, Michael John Casey, Catherine Aselford, Ken Jackson, Andy Clements, Casey Platt, Scott McCormick, Lily Beacon, Michael Glenn, M.B. Van Dorn, James Lewis, Yasmin Toison, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Peter Stray, Dylan Lynch, Elizabeth Demery, Tim Carlin, Thomas Penny, and Mort Shelby. Texas Rangers number 4, Rangers Trail. Austin, Texas, January 1874. The election had gone smoothly, except for certain extra-legal shenanigans perpetrated by both sides. Those were a normal feature of Texas politics and came as no surprise. By contrast, the aftermath was chaotic enough to try the patience of saints, if there had been any. Rusty Shannon had encountered few saints in Reconstruction, Texas. He slow-trotted his dun horse westward along a rutted wagon road, skirting the edge of the Colorado River, and wished he were back home on the farm where he belonged. On one side of him rode Sheriff Tom Blessing, in his 60s, but still blacksmith strong, solid as a block of oak timber. On the other, Andy Pickard sat with his mouth open in a country boy's youthful awe as he marveled at the town just ahead. His urban experience had been limited to a few small crossroads settlements.
I had no idea Austin was this big. Must be 3, maybe 4,000 people here. I never saw such a place in my life.
No one knew exactly how long a life that had been. Andy had been orphaned before he was old enough to retain clear memories. Rusty's best judgment was that he might be 18 or 19, allowing some leeway on one side or the other. Strenuous outdoor labor and the excesses of Texas weather had given him a mature appearance beyond his years. Rusty turned up his frayed old coat collar against a cold wind coming off the river. His face, browned and chiseled with premature lines, was that of a man of 40 or more. Actually, he was in his mid-30s, but most had been hard years spent in sun and wind, riding with frontier rangers, or walking behind mules and a plow.
I hate this place. It's overrun with gamblers and whiskey peddlers and pickpockets.
Oh, it's even worse than that, Rusty. Austin's overrun with lawyers.
Andy had seen little of gamblers, whiskey peddlers, pickpockets, or lawyers, but he was itching to start.
You always say I need more learning. I'll bet I could learn a lot here.
Mostly stuff you oughtn't to know.
Andy was well-schooled in the ways of nature, but Rusty had worried about his limited book education. Andy had caught a little here and a little there as country teachers came, stayed a while, then drifted on. Rusty, in his time, had had the advantage of coaching by a foster mother. There had been no woman to help teach Andy. At least he could read a newspaper, and he had an aptitude with figures. He was not easily cheated, nor was he a forgiving victim. Most who tried once never cared to do it a second time.
I doubt I'd get bored in a place like this. Bet there's something going on all the time.
Most of it you wouldn't want any part of.
Rusty was here against his will and better judgment. He had planned a journey north toward Fort Belknap to visit the Monahan family and to bring Josie Monahan back with him as his wife. But Tom had asked him to make this trip, and it was against Rusty's nature to refuse a good friend. Tom had ridden often with Daddy Mike Shannon in old times when there was Indian trouble. He had introduced Rusty to the Rangers at a crisis point when Rusty had badly needed somewhere to go. Rusty often said he would follow Tom into hell with a bucket of water. He had, once or twice. Austin might not be hell, but Rusty didn't consider it heaven either. He wished he'd not given in to Andy's plea that he be allowed to come along. He dreaded the temptations this town might present to someone no longer a boy, but not quite yet a man. Rusty had taken on the responsibility of a foster brother after Andy's nearest known relative, an uncle, had rejected him. At times, like now, it had been an uneasy burden to carry.
Tom, reckon how we'll find your friend amongst all those people?
Maybe we'll get lucky and stumble into him. Otherwise, he's likely putting up at a wagon yard. We'll ask around.
Tom had been a county sheriff before Reconstruction authorities threw him out of office for having served the Texas Confederate government. The recent election had restored his badge after the former Confederates finally regained their right to vote. Another sheriff, a friend of his, had sent word that Tom was badly needed in Austin. He'd not explained his reasons. He had just said to hurry and to bring help. Tom had immediately called on Rusty, respecting his law enforcement experience as a ranger before war's end had caused the ranger companies to disintegrate. Andy had jumped at a chance to quit the farm for a while and see the city. Because it was the dead of winter, Rusty and Andy had little farm work that could not be postponed. Last year's crop was long since harvested, and this year's planting had to await warm ground. It would have been a good time for Rusty to get his red hair trimmed, then take a several days' ride up to the Monahan place and ask Josie a question he had postponed much too long. Instead, he found himself approaching Austin and wondering why. During ranger service that often took him far from home, Rusty had remained at heart a farmer with a strong tie to land he had known since boyhood. Andy empathized, but had never been that dedicated to the soil. A tumultuous boyhood had given him a restless spirit. He welcomed any excuse to saddle Long Red and travel over new ground, across rivers he had not previously known. A squad of black soldiers drew Rusty's attention.
They're studying us like we might be outlaws.
They're looking at our guns. They're always afraid some old rebel may take a notion to declare war again.
Rusty half expected the soldiers to stop them, but they simply watched in stone-faced silence as the three riders passed by and turned into a long street, which a sign on the corner said was Congress. At the head of it, well to the north, stood an imposing structure larger than any other Rusty could see.
Is that the Capitol? The place where they make all the laws?
That's the place. Fixing to be a lot of different faces there now that we've elected a new governor. Be a lot of carpetbaggers hunting new country.
Rusty had mixed feelings about the outsiders who had crowded into Texas after the war, hungry for opportunity. On the positive side, they had brought money to a state drained dry after 4 years of debilitating conflict. On the negative side, some had brought a bottomless hunger for anything they could grab and went to any lengths of stealth or violence necessary to satisfy it. Now thousands of ex-Confederates, disenfranchised after the war, had finally recovered their voting rights. By a margin of 2-1, they had defeated the Union-backed Reconstruction governor, Edmund J. Davis. They had voted in Richard Koch, a former Confederate Army officer and one of their own. Perhaps that transition accounted for the large numbers of men standing along the street as if waiting for something to happen. It did not, however, account for so many being heavily burdened by a variety of firearms.
Looks like the war is fixing to start again.
I'm commencing to wonder what we've ridden into.
Rusty reined his dun horse over to a man leaning against a cedar hitching post.
Say, friend, what's the big attraction in town?
I reckon you know or you wouldn't be here. Did Governor Davis send for you?
I wouldn't know Edmund J. Davis from George Washington.
A lot of Davis's friends have come to town, including his old state police. They're all toting guns. I see that you are, too.
We brought our guns because we came a long ways. We didn't know what we might run into or who.
Well, just so you ain't one of them Davis police.
I used to be a ranger, but I never was a state policeman.
The governor's special police force, a mixture of white and black, had been organized as part of the state's Reconstruction government, replacing the traditional rangers. Excesses had given the force a reputation for arrogance and brutality, arousing enmity in most Texans. Rusty had always felt that a majority were well-intentioned, but a scattering of scoundrels overshadowed the law enforcement achievements of the rest. A new legislature had recently abolished the state police to the relief of the citizenry and the consternation of Governor Davis.
Well, local folks are naturally stirred up about so many strangers bringing guns to town. Koch has been sworn in as governor, but Davis won't recognize him. Word has gone around that he has no intention of giving up the office.
But the people voted him out.
He's declared the election unconstitutional.
He can't! That's not legal!
Now, he claims he's got the authority to say what's legal and what's not. Thinks he's the King of England, or maybe old Pharaoh.
The occupying Union forces had given their hand-picked governor dictatorial power. He had instituted worthwhile improvements, particularly to the educational system. Yet Texans resented his issuing punitive executive orders from which they had no recourse. Though Davis was a Southerner and a longtime citizen of the state, most former Confederates felt that he belonged to the enemy. He had fled Texas early in the war, eventually becoming a brigadier general in the Union Army. The governor's office had been his reward. Now it appeared that he did not intend to give it up.
We hold no brief for Davis. We voted for Koch. Well, at least I did.
Rusty nodded. He, too, had voted for Koch because he felt it was time to shed the smothering Reconstruction regime so Texas could work its own way back to order and stability.
Then I'd advise you to either join Koch's militia or take care of your business and move out of town before the roof blows off of the Capitol yonder.
Rusty leaned over to Tom.
I think I see why your sheriff friend asked you to come and bring help.
I've known him a long time. I couldn't turn him down. We're liable to get pulled into a fight that ain't ours. This whole damned war wasn't really ours.
Like the late Sam Houston, Rusty had never favored secession from the Union, nor had he ever developed any allegiance to the Confederacy. One reason he had remained with the Frontier Rangers throughout the war was to avoid conscription into the rebel army. Even so, he had come to resent the oppressive federal occupation.
I wouldn't have asked you to come if I'd have known we were riding into a situation like this. Maybe you and Andy better turn around and go home.
We ain't hardly seen the city yet.
We've come this far, so we'll wait and size things up. Then we can go home if we're mind to.
Davis got beat, fair and square. If he was a proper gentleman, he'd recognize the will of the people. He'd yield up the office.
The Comanche way is simpler. A chief can't force anybody to do anything. If the people don't like him anymore, they just quit paying attention to him. No election, no fight, no nothing. And everybody claims white people are smarter.
Suddenly, two men burst off the sidewalk and into the dirt street, wildly swinging their fists. Immediately, another man joined the fray, then two more, wrestling awkwardly.
Whose side are we on?
Nobody's. We'd best move on before some fool pulls a gun.
Rusty found the way blocked by men rushing to watch the fight. Faces were bloodied and shirts torn, but nobody drew a pistol or knife. Whatever the quarrel was about, the participants did not seem to consider it worth a killing. A city policeman strode down the street, gave the situation a quick study, then stepped back to observe from a comfortable distance, hands in his pockets. Shortly, a blue-clad army officer trotted his horse up beside the policeman.
Aren't you gonna stop this?
The policeman did not take his hands from his pockets.
A man can get himself hurt messing in where he wasn't asked. Long as they don't kill one another, I say let them have the fun.
You are paid to enforce the peace.
Not near enough. Ain't been any peace around here since this governor business came up. You want to stop the fight? You go ahead.
The army is not supposed to interfere. This is a civilian matter.
And this here civilian is going into that grog shop yonder to have himself a drink. If anybody gets killed, come and fetch me.
The policeman turned away. The officer watched him in frustration, then turned his attention to the ongoing fight. A couple of the brawlers had had enough and crawled away to sit on the edge of the wooden sidewalk, there to nurse their wounds while the altercation went on. They were not missed. Andy's eyes danced with excitement as his fists mimicked the movements of the belligerents. He had been in plenty of fights himself, usually instigated by other young men, making fun of the ways he had learned from the Indians. Rusty knew a good scrap when he saw one. This was not a good one. It was slow-footed and clumsy, loud, but not likely to produce anything more serious than loose teeth, bruised knuckles, and maybe a flattened nose. He decided the policeman had been right in leaving bad nature to run its course. Onlookers' comments bore out this assumption that some of the fighters were Davis men, others supported Coke. The fight slowly staggered to a standstill. The Coke men appeared to carry the victory, such as it was. The victors moved away in a triumphant group, weaving toward the grog shop the policeman had chosen. Their opponents dragged themselves to the sidewalk and slumped there, exhausted.
Come on, boys. Let's get moving.
Some folks take their politics serious.
With good reason. Davis's men tromped on everybody that got in their way. Stole half the state of Texas. Now comes a day of reckoning, and they ain't willing to fess up.
The three rode north up the wide street, Rusty warily eyeing the armed men scattered all along. He saw no reason anyone would shoot at him on purpose, but he had learned long ago that the innocent bystander was usually the first one hurt. The more innocent, the more likely. They reined up short of the Capitol building. Several men stood shoulder to shoulder at the front door, holding rifles. They had a military bearing, but did not wear uniforms. Rusty surmised they were former Confederate soldiers who had not forgotten the regimens learned in war.
Looks like they're guarding the state treasury.
Too late for that. Talk is that Davis's adjutant general slipped away with it and sailed for Europe.
Tom stepped down from the saddle and lifted the reins for Andy to hold.
You all better stay here so we don't accidentally provoke somebody into something rash. I'll walk up there and see what the game is.
Tom unstrapped his pistol belt and hung it over the saddle horn as an indication that his intentions were benign. Andy gazed southward, back down Congress Avenue, where substantial buildings lined each side. Rusty assumed he was marveling at the variety of merchandise available here for anyone who had the money to buy it. That was the catch. Texas was just emerging from the economic devastation of war and its aftermath. Not many people, other than opportunistic outsiders, had much money to spend. Most of what Texans needed, they produced for themselves or did without. But Austin had been something of an oasis, money flowing more freely because of the Union soldiers and the state's Reconstruction government based here. It dawned on Rusty that Andy's attention was focused on two young women who stood in front of a nearby saloon. It was obvious they were not Sunday school teachers.
Don't let your curiosity get stirred up too much. I don't expect we'll be staying.
Tom returned, his jaw set grimly.
Governor Davis has got himself barricaded in the Capitol basement with a bunch of his old state police. The Coke men and legislature have got the upper floor.
A Mexican standoff.
Maybe not for long. Davis has sent a wire to President Grant. He's asking him to order the troops in. Wants them to throw out the Coke crowd and keep him in office.
If he does, there's apt to be an awful fight.
I wish old Buffalo Caller could have seen this.
Buffalo Caller was the Comanche warrior who had first captured Andy and kept him for his own.
He would have given 100 horses to watch white men battle one another instead of fighting the people. And it would have been worth every one of them.
You're white! That's a scandalous thing to say.
Was it to happen, I'd cheer for the old Texans to win. But not too quick. I'd like to see the fight stretch out a while.
Oh, scandalous. I've offered to do my part and stand with Coke. This ain't none of y'all's fight, unless you want it to be.
We're here now. We wouldn't go off and leave you by yourself.
You sound like your old daddy Mike. But I won't be by myself. There's several of my friends up there from way back. There's a bunch of old rangers, too. Friends of yours I'd warrant.
Rangers?
Yeah, but like I said, it don't have to be your fight. I wouldn't want a young fella like Andy on my conscience. Or you either.
We came of our own accord. We're grown men. Well, I am, anyway.
There's a wagon yard down yonder. Would you take my horse for me?
Sure thing. Come on, Andy.
Andy led Tom's mount. Rusty guessed there must be 100 horses in the several corrals to the side of and beyond the large wooden barn. A droop-shouldered liveryman slouched in the big open doorway, waiting for customers.
What can I do for you?
Got room for 3 more horses?
Well, if there ain't room enough, we'll just stack them like cordwood. I expect y'all are in town to see the excitement.
We didn't know about it till we got here.
Well, I ain't taking sides, you understand, but I hope the Coke people give that Davis crowd a hell of a licking. I've had a gutful of them thieves.
Sounds like you have taken sides.
Yeah, I reckon. But if the shooting starts, I'm keeping my head down. I'd taken a Yankee ball in my leg during the war. Convince me I ain't no fighting man.
But you're willing to take money from either side.
I take care of horses, and horses don't know nothing about politics. I do business with any and all, long as the money is genuine and paid in advance.
Rusty picked up on the man's hint and quickly reached into his pocket, fishing out the proper coins to pay the man.
We'll want to bed down here in the wagon yard tonight. We've got no money to waste on a hotel.
Hotel's all full anyway. Spread your blankets anywhere you can find an empty space. And be careful with your matches. You don't want to buy no burned-up barn.
The liveryman looked behind him as if to be certain he would not be overheard.
A couple of fellers were talking back of the barn. They were waiting for Coke to give the word to make a rush against the Capitol and put Davis out on the street. Could be a right interesting show.
Rusty glanced uneasily at Andy.
Tom could get hurt. He's a shade old to be mixing in a bad fight.
He's never run away from one yet. That's why they made him sheriff again.
He ought not to have let them put that badge back on him. I've got a notion to try and talk him into going home before something happens. That sick wife of his needs him more than anybody else here does.
Getting kind of late in the day. We couldn't go far before dark.
We could get out of gunshot range.
Andy resigned himself to disappointment. He patted Long Red's neck.
You better eat your oats in a hurry.
Don't turn our horses into the lot just yet. We're liable to be leaving.
Yeah, I guess you'll want your money back. You still want me to feed them some oats?
I wish you would.
The two men quickly left the yard and made their way back out onto the streets. Rusty saw a crowd of nervous-looking men standing around the front of a hotel, as if waiting for someone to assert leadership and take them somewhere. Anywhere, to do something, anything.
Hey, Rusty, wait up!
Len Tanner was tall and lanky, in patched trousers that hung loose around a waist thin as a slab of bacon. He always looked as if he had not eaten a square meal in a month. In truth, he could put away an alarming amount of groceries when the opportunity presented itself.
Len, thought you were back in East Texas visiting your kin.
Ain't much excitement in seeing kin folks. Here's where the fun's at.
Rusty had ridden with Tanner during his ranger service. Since the war, Tanner had spent much of his time at Rusty's farm when he lacked something better to do. He was not addicted to steady employment.
There's a bunch of our old ranger bunkies here, ready to run the carpetbaggers out of town on a rail. But Coke keeps holding back, hoping Davis will cave in without a fight.
What if he doesn't?
After fighting the damn Comanches, this ought not to make us break a sweat. Sorry, Andy, I didn't mean nothing personal.
I take it as a compliment to the Comanches.
They're honest enemies, at least. They come against you face to face. Carpetbaggers sneak up behind you and kill you with affidavits.
Tanner's family lost their farm to confiscatory reconstruction taxes, though he, like Rusty, had never actively supported the Confederacy.
I know why Davis wants to keep that office. There's some of Texas that his cronies ain't stole yet. Speaking of old friends, I'll bet it's been a spell since you've seen Jim and Johnny Morris.
Sure has. Are those rascals here?
The Morris brothers had served in the same ranger company as Rusty and Tanner until they went into the Confederate Army late in the war.
Me and them are planning on a little sortie tonight, going to aggravate some Yankee soldiers.
That did not surprise Rusty. Like Tanner, the brothers had always gloried in a fracas. If they couldn't find a fight already in progress, they had occasionally instigated one. Rusty and Andy followed Tanner through the crowd. Two men of roughly Rusty's age pushed their way to him. They could be taken for twins, though Jim was a year or so the eldest.
Glad to see you're still alive.
Jim gripped Rusty's outstretched hand with a force that could crush bones.
Me and Johnny figured you'd worked yourself to death on that wore-out farm.
I've come awful close.
You'd be the Comanche button Len's been telling us about.
The brothers being friends of Tanner's did not automatically assure Andy's acceptance. He regarded them with an element of doubt.
Len's been known to lie a little, once or twice.
We've caught him abusing the facts ourselves, but only when he's awake.
Johnny jerked his head, beckoning Rusty and the others beyond the edge of the crowd.
Rusty, you're just the man to help us do a little job tonight.
I'd want to hear the particulars before I say anything.
Army's brought up a cannon from San Antone.
Hard to believe the Army would fire on the Capitol while Davis and some of his people hold the basement floor.
No, but they'd fire into the crowd if a bunch was to try and rush the building. We figure they're just waiting for Grant to wire them the orders.
But a cannon? What could you do against a weapon the size of that?
Me and Johnny and Lynn are going to spike it.
What do you mean, spike it?
You drive an iron spike into the touch hole. They can't fire till they get it out. And that can be hell to do if it's pounded in there hard enough.
Don't you know they'll be guarding it? You'll get yourself shot.
Len'll distract the guards. Won't take us but a minute to fix the cannon and be gone. You could help him.
You're crazy. All three of you.
Let's do it, Rusty. We can run rings around them soldiers.
Four of you are crazy. You're too young to be mixing into a thing like this.
How old were you the first time you rode with the Rangers?
That was a long time ago. Times were different.
Johnny Morris turned.
Yonder comes some of them brunette Yankees.
A small squad of black troopers marched up the street, led by a white officer on horseback. The same one Rusty had seen earlier.
At least they ain't brought their cannon with them.
Washington still ain't giving them permission to mix in. That's all they're waiting for.
The presence of black troops had been a thorn in the sides of ex-Confederates during the Reconstruction years. Texans were convinced that the victorious Union intended to humiliate them by putting them under the authority of former slaves. The effect had been more of outrage than of humiliation. One man stepped out past the others and shook his fist.
God damn all you Yankee bastards! Why don't you take your slave soldiers and go back home?
The officer unbuttoned his holster and drew a pistol. He pushed his horse up close and brought the barrel down across the heckler's head.
Arrest him. Two of you men take him to the bullpen.
That old boy was too drunk to know what he was saying.
He knew. Loud talk is no reason to break a man's skull.
And whatever happened to free speech?
Well, Jim, it ain't free anymore. The price keeps going up.
Rusty gave way to rising anger as two troopers dragged the half-conscious man away. He looked into the faces of his friends and saw the same reaction.
Don't you think we ought to do something?
Like what? South already lost one war.
At least you can look the situation over with us. Help us figure out how we're going to do it.
I guess I can go that far. But this is a dogfight. Me and Andy have got no dog in it.
The liveryman did not get up from his rawhide-bound chair, but he eyed Rusty with regret.
Fixing to go? I done fed your horses some oats, so I can't give you all your money back.
We're not leaving town yet.
Oh. Well, I'll show you where they're at.
Andy lagged behind, nursing his disappointment. Rusty had told him he had to stay at the wagon yard. He saw no need for Andy to take chances by joining Tanner and the Morrises. The liveryman led Rusty into the barn to a small pen where his horse, Andy's, and Tom's still nuzzled a wooden trough, seeking stray bits of grain stuck in the cracks. Rusty wondered if they'd actually been fed as much as he had paid for. He led his dun out into the fading daylight.
How's my young Comanche friend?
Andy considered his answer.
I don't remember that we was ever friends, Farley Brackett.
Brackett was a large man with a scar from the edge of his eye down to his cheek. War had scarred him even worse on the inside, turning him into an outlaw, at least in the eyes of the state police.
See, you still got my sorrel horse.
He never was your horse. Your daddy gave him to Rusty, and Rusty gave him to me.
He wasn't my daddy's to give. He was mine.
So you say. But your daddy's dead. We can't ask him.
You're running a risk, Farley, showing up in public. The state police don't forget.
They've had their fangs pulled, but I haven't. Any of them try to mess with me, he'll get what they gave my old daddy.
State police had mistaken the father for Farley and had killed him.
Anyway, you leave Andy alone. We're not here to fight.
Everybody else is. I still say he's my horse. You just got the loan of him. For now.
He can't take Long Red back, can he?
He's got no claim. His daddy gave me that horse to replace one Farley stole when he was on the run.
If he tries to take Long Red, I'll shoot him.
You shouldn't talk loose about killing. It can lead to more than just talk.
Just the same, I'm keeping a close eye on Long Red. Farley had better not so much as look crossways at him.
Rusty met Tanner and the brothers where the three had dropped their blankets near the river. Johnny pointed.
Troops made camp down this way.
Rusty had noticed the sound of the approaching horse from a ways off. He turned in anger as Andy pulled in beside him.
I told you to stay behind.
That Farley kept hanging around the stable. I decided the best way for me to keep an eye on Long Red was to be riding him.
All right, but don't be getting any foolish notions.
Rusty saw several rows of tents lined in military order.
They got the cannon placed back of the tents.
100 yards beyond the tent line stood a set of wooden pens. The troops were infantry. Rusty surmised that the few horses he saw were for the officers. He counted 4 draft mules. Drawing the cannon would be their job.
A mean piece of business, and all on account of politics.
Len, the whole war was because of politics.
Rusty was not surprised to see 2 black soldiers standing guard on either side of the cannon. He was a little surprised there weren't more.
You think they'll stand by idle while you all drive your spike?
When the time comes, I'll see to it that they ain't there.
You wouldn't kill them. The army would run you to the ground and hang you from the tallest tree they can find. If they didn't just shoot you outright.
We wouldn't hurt a hair on their heads. Lennon's gonna draw them away.
How?
We hoped you'd help us figure that out.
Rusty studied the cannon and everything around it. He saw a stack of hay near the horse pens.
I don't see anybody guarding that hay yonder. If it was to accidentally catch a fire...
Well, that's the same stunt me and Johnny pulled on some Yankees just before the end of the war. Got away with a bunch of their horses. Well, they didn't need that many anyway, since their hay burned up. They didn't have anything to feed them.
Andy had listened quietly, but excitement built in his eyes. Rusty sought to head him off.
You're not going along with him. You're too young and it's too dangerous.
I've been in dangerous places before. My Comanche brother steals the ponies, could tell you that.
But he's not here. If he was, he'd be welcome to help. But not you. I didn't spend all these years raising you to lose you in a fight that's none of your business.
Here come some soldiers to see what we're about. You want to talk to them?
4 troopers and a white officer were marching toward the 5 Texans.
I don't believe we've got anything to talk about.
Rusty reined his horse around and started back toward the brothers' camp, careful not to move faster than a walk. He did not want to arouse suspicion by appearing to run away. The others followed him. The troopers soon stopped.
You reckon they suspect us?
They've suspected everybody since the first day they came into Texas.
Tom Blessing walked to the wagon yard about sundown, tired and burdened with worry.
Hard to guess what's fixing to happen. Governor Coke has got a bunch of his old rangers at his side. Governor Davis has called out the Travis Rifles to help him hold the Capitol. Some of them have come over to us, but there's enough left to give us a right smart of trouble. And we still don't know what President Grant will do. If he orders the troops in with their cannons...
Don't you worry yourself about that cannon. It's fixing to be took care of.
Rusty frowned at Tanner and looked about to see if anyone might have overheard. Most people around here were strangers. He had no way of knowing which side they were on.
The Morris boys figure on spiking that cannon tonight.
They're liable to get spiked themselves.
Len Tanner's going to help.
That's no big relief.
Tom nodded toward Andy.
Surely you're not letting the boy go.
He's staying here with me.
Good. We're dealing with people who are used to absolute power. If they got him in their sights, they wouldn't take his youth into account.
If I was still with the Comanches, I'd be looked at as a warrior now. I sure wouldn't let a bunch of bluecoats scare me.
They scare me. I just hope Grant doesn't set them loose. You know they arrested the mayor today.
I hadn't heard that.
Roughed him up some, then turned him loose because it looked like a riot was fixing to break out. They still haven't got their orders from Washington.
Wouldn't take but one good spark to touch off the powder. I wish we'd gone back home.
For my wife's sake, I wish we'd never been asked to come in the first place. She needs a woman to be with her till she gets her feet back under her. I ain't been able to find one who'd stay.
We could start home right now. Won't be full dark for another hour.
We finally got back the right to vote. It's time to get off our knees and stand on our feet.
No matter what it costs?
We're at a fork in the road. One way follows the law, the other twists the law to whatever it wants it to be.
First time I ever heard you make a speech.
I don't often feel the need, especially with you.
Rusty did not intend to go to sleep so early, but it had been a long day. Soon after he lay down on his blankets, he dozed off. Rusty turned and saw that Andy's blankets had been thrown back. Andy was gone.
Damn fool, kid. He's gone to help Tanner and the Morrises.
The stable man was asleep on a steel cot in a small office at the front of the barn.
Wake up.
Don't you people know what the night is meant for?
That boy who was with me, did you see him leave?
Oh, and that's time for rest. You want your horse, you know where he's at. Catch him yourself. And then you can put him back for yourself when you come in. If you're too drunk to unlatch the gate, just to tie him to the fence.
How long has it been since the kid left?
I didn't look at my watch. What kind of critter is that Button anyway?
What do you mean?
Well, he come stealing in and got his horse. I wouldn't have known he was here if the horse hadn't snorted just as he passed my door. Wouldn't have surprised me none if that boy's got Indian blood in him.
I'll admit he acts like it.
Probably snuck off to find a sporting gal. Oh, I did when I was his age. Expect you did too. I got no quarrel with it as long as they let a man sleep.
Rusty quickly went to his horse and saddled it.
The kid's got more nerve than judgment. He's as bad as Len Tanner.
He rode in a long trot to the Morris brothers' camp at the edge of town. He found the fire burned low. No one was there. He was sure he knew where they were, and Andy was with them.
Oh, damn Len Tanner. He knew I didn't want Andy to be any part of this.
He rode toward the soldier camp under a dark sky, the moon hidden by a heavy cover of clouds. Unable to see much, he almost rode up on two men sitting on horseback.
Who the hell are you?
Johnny, it's me, Rusty. Where are Len and Andy?
They snuck off down yonder to set the hay afire. While everybody's running to fight the fire, me and Jim will fix the cannon.
Johnny showed Rusty an iron rod. Jim carried a blacksmith's hammer across the pommel of his saddle.
Why didn't you all turn the boy back?
His mind was made up. We couldn't have stopped him if we hit him over the head with his hammer.
Maybe I can head him off. You all be careful. Some Yankees are good shots.
Rusty rode down toward the camp. He could not make out the shape of the haystack, but he knew more or less where it should be. As he drew closer, Rusty saw that the cannon guards had a fire of their own. Rusty took that as a good sign. Glare from the flames would diminish their ability to see through the darkness. He saw a match flare, then flicker out. Andy and Tanner must be having poor luck getting the hay to catch fire. Both were single-minded enough to keep trying, even if soldiers swarmed over them.
Who goes there?
Oh, no.
Who are you? Speak before I blow your head off!
I'm Robert E. Lee, and I'm here to whoop some Yankee sons of bitches.
Rusty saw the soldier strike Tanner in the stomach with the butt of a rifle. Rusty didn't give him a second chance. He rode in, swinging his pistol.
Corporal of the Guard! Post number two!
The shout came from the direction of the cannon. He heard more soldiers running toward him. Rusty fired his pistol into the air, hoping to confuse and perhaps discourage the soldiers.
Forget the fire! Get out of here!
The troopers guarding the cannon came on the run, silhouetted against their fire. Rusty aimed a shot in their general direction. He leaned low to be sure he didn't present a clear target. Andy came riding out, leading Tanner's horse.
Here, Len! Get on him, quick!
You two stirred up the whole Yankee army!
Sure enough!
But we couldn't get the fire started.
Damn hay was wet. All it burned was my fingers.
It was a fool notion in the first place.
Only thing wrong with it was that it didn't work.
Rusty did not see the Morris brothers, but he figured they were old enough to take care of themselves. They always had. Andy was young, eager, and still needed watching. Tanner should have known better, but he was inclined to create trouble even where there had been none. He had long maintained that a good fight was more invigorating than a double shot of whiskey. Rusty led Andy and Tanner along the river until he was sure they'd shaken off pursuit by the foot soldiers. Then he circled back in the direction of the Morris brothers' camp.
Now listen here, Andy.
I know what you're gonna say, so there ain't no use saying it. I didn't have any business being out here, but I figured Len needed help. By himself, he was apt to get killed.
You could have both been killed.
We weren't, and I had more fun tonight than I ever got following a mule across a field. Len, you're looking kind of sick.
I took a rifle butt in my ribs. I'm going to be awful sore in the morning. Every time a man gets to feeling smart, something comes along, kicks him in the belly.
Johnny and Jim arrived in camp just then.
Everybody all right? What went wrong out there?
Damp hay. Looks like it ruined you all's plan.
Not really. Len and the boy set out to draw attention away from us. They sure did that.
You managed to spike the cannon after all?
The only way it could hurt anybody now would be if it fell on them.
The troops could do a lot of damage with their rifles if they were called into the dispute, but at least they shouldn't be able to use artillery against the crowd.
If you all don't mind a little company, I think me and Andy will bed down here instead of going back to the wagon yard. The stable keeper needs his sleep.
With only their saddle blankets for cover against the night chill, Rusty and Andy lay near the campfire. Rusty poked a little fresh wood among the coals and watched the flames rise up before he stretched out on the ground. He lay awake, replaying the evening's action in his mind. Andy rolled to one side, then moved to the other, pulling his legs up tightly.
Can't you sleep?
I'm a little cold. There was too much excitement, I guess. Got my blood all stirred up.
I'm not having much luck myself.
Rusty arose to put more wood on the fire. Instead of lying down and rolling up in his saddle blanket, he squatted on his heels and stared into the flames.
Been doing some thinking, too. How would you like to have a cabin of your own?
What do I need a cabin for? There's plenty of room in yours.
Maybe not for long.
How come?
I've been planning a trip up to the Monahan farm to see how everybody's getting along.
Especially Josie?
Especially Josie. I'm figuring on asking her to marry me.
It's about time. She's been asking you long enough.
Things weren't right before. I never knew what the carpetbaggers might throw at us. They tried once to take the farm, and I was always afraid they might do it again. But things will settle down now that we've got a new governor.
We've got two governors. We don't know which one will win out.
I've got a feeling. Old Preacher Webb always said, if you keep the faith, good things will eventually come to you.
After a campfire breakfast of bacon and black coffee, all five rode up onto Congress Avenue to see if anything had changed overnight. A large group of men had gathered some distance below the Capitol building. Rusty recognized several as former Rangers with whom he had ridden at one time or another. Tom Blessing walked out from among them.
Word has come from Washington. President Grant won't order the troops to help Davis. He told them the election is over, he lost, and he just might as well yield like a gentleman.
He hasn't given up, though, has he?
Not yet, but he must be feeling like a mule has kicked him in the ribs. He can't call in the army. All he's got backing him up now is a bunch of his old state police and some office holders who know they're fixing to be out of a job. We're waiting for Governor Coke to show up and lead us on a march to the Capitol.
And if Davis won't give up?
We'll burn that bridge when we get to it.
Richard Coke was tall and heavy set, his white beard neatly trimmed. He wore a suit well tailored to his bulk and projected a sense of dignity the way a governor of Texas was supposed to, in Rusty's view.
Let's go.
Flanked on either side by ex-Rangers and Confederate officers Rip Ford and Henry McCulloch, he led the parade of determined men up Congress. In front of the Capitol stood a line of well-armed Davis men, appearing just as determined. Coke acted as if he didn't see them, never breaking stride. The defenders looked to one another for guidance, for someone to take the initiative and do something. No one did. The Davis men stepped back grudgingly, and the Coke procession marched into the Capitol. Tall, gaunt, defiant Davis awaited them in the hallway outside of his office. The door was closed. He stared sullenly at Coke.
Governor Davis, the new legislature has convened and canvassed the vote. They have declared that I am the rightful holder of this office. I respectfully request that you honor the wishes of the people of Texas.
I do not recognize the election as legitimate, but I see that the laws of the state have been trampled underfoot. The rule of the mob has prevailed.
Davis strode past Coke. His opponents moved aside to let him pass. He did not look right or left, but focused his gaze straight ahead. Len Tanner tried the door to the governor's office.
Locked. Davis didn't turn over the key.
Break it open.
Tanner and a couple of others put their shoulders to the task. Inside the office, Davis's Secretary of State still sat at his desk.
It's over. You can leave.
The man sat in stubborn silence.
Let's throw him out the window.
That is the way of the old regime. As of today, Texas is steering a new course.
Three men lifted the secretary from his chair and hustled him outside. The people of Austin, most of the visitors, celebrated far into the night. Rusty thought of the stable keeper. He wouldn't be getting much sleep. Tom Blessing sat on the ground near the Morris Brothers campfire, chewing a piece of bacon.
I'm ready to start home, come daylight. You and Andy seen enough of the big city?
Rusty glanced at Andy, who put up no argument.
I was ready before we came. But now that it's over, I'm glad we were here to see it. It'll be something to tell our grandchildren about someday.
Andy's too young to be thinking about grandchildren, and you ain't even married.
I'm figuring on fixing that.
Tom stopped chewing. He seemed a little perturbed.
You sure being a ranger is a proper thing for a married man?
I'm not a ranger anymore.
But you could be again. Governor Coke says one of the first things he plans to do is reorganize the Rangers. He'll be looking for men of experience.
Yeah, I've had plenty of experience. More than I ever looked for. I'm not sure I want any more like it.
It gets in your blood, like sheriffing got into mine. You'll want to study on that before you take to double harness.
Len Tanner stood with hands in his pockets to keep them warm. He watched as Rusty and Andy lifted blankets, provisions, and Rusty's saddle into the bed of the wagon. The sun was just breaking over the eastern horizon, looking crisp and frosty through a thin blanket of gray winter clouds.
I don't see why I'd want to take the wagon. You'd get there a lot sooner if you rode horseback.
Josie'll be wanting to bring all her things.
How do you know she'll even come? You ain't asked her yet.
She'll come.
Rusty looked toward a new single log cabin standing halfway between the older double cabin and the livestock pens.
I hope you don't mind finishing the roof on Andy's cabin.
I got nothing better to do. And Shandy's coming over to help me build the chimney.
Shandy was a former slave who lived a few miles away. Age had bent his slender frame, but his hands were still those of an artisan.
We'll have the place ready for the button to move in by the time you all get back.
Andy saddled Long Red and tied Rusty's dun horse behind the wagon.
Reckon we got it all?
If we don't, we'll do without it.
Rusty shook Tanner's hand and climbed onto the wagon seat.
Tell that cute little Alice girl I said howdy.
We'll tell her.
And watch out for Indians. They may not all know they're Andy's friends.
I doubt they'll come far enough south for us to see them. They've got their hands full fighting buffalo hunters.
They crossed the Colorado River at a ford. The water was higher than it would be in spring when winter dormant vegetation came back to life and sapped much of the underground moisture before it had a chance to seep into the river. Rusty pushed hard to keep the team moving forward briskly enough that the current would not pick up the wagon and carry it away. He had ridden this trail many times, going to or from the Monahan farm or in the course of his ranger duties. Andy had ridden it too, once when he was almost too young to remember. Andy rode alongside the wagon, talking at intervals, then silent for long stretches. He was especially quiet after they made the first night's camp. Rusty recognized the dark moods that came over him now and then and did not push him for conversation. Andy spoke as the evening came to a close.
We going by the grave?
We can if you want to.
I reckon I want to. Night.
Thank you. grave was above the north bank of a small creek, just off the wagon track. At one end of a stack of stones, a wooden cross had fallen to the ground. Rusty moved the wagon a little beyond the spot and drew to a halt. Andy approached the grave, his hat removed and his head bowed. Rusty got down from the wagon, but stood back, letting Andy have his time alone. After a while, he wiped a sleeve across his eyes. As he picked up the wooden cross, Rusty joined him, hat in his hand. Andy repositioned the cross and pulled off a small wad of dark hair.
Buffalo. Knocked it over, scratching an itch.
Some of the stones lay scattered. Andy placed them neatly back over the mound. When he was satisfied with the appearance of the grave, he straightened.
I wish we had Preacher Webb with us. He'd know the words to say.
He already said them when we first buried her here.
I can't quite remember what my mother looked like. I sort of remember her voice, but I can't see her face in my mind. I like to think she was pretty.
I expect she was, but she'd been poorly treated by the time we found her.
The memory chilled Rusty. It had been his first time to ride with the Rangers, though they were little more than a loose band of local militia at the time. They had trailed after marauding Comanches who had killed several settlers and swept away all the horses they could find. They had kidnapped a small boy and his mother. The Rangers had found the mother here, dead. The boy had disappeared. He was not seen again until Andy turned up years later, left behind in the wake of another Comanche raid.
I guess a lot of folks wouldn't understand. I don't myself sometimes. The Comanches killed my mother here. Then they took me as one of their own. Some would say I ought to hate them, but they became my people. They're still my people.
I like to think we're your people too. Me and Len and Shanty and the Monahans. Tom Blessing too.
You are. Guess there ain't many like me with people on both sides of the fence. Not blood kin, but even better.
Andy turned toward his horse.
We don't have to be in any hurry if you'd like to stay a while.
I've said all I know to say to her. Staying and wishing won't bring her back. It won't even bring back a clear memory. Someday, I'm coming back and putting a fence around that place.